Welcome to Insight Aviation, helping you to take a look inside the world of captains, aerospace professionals, air traffic controllers, and much more. Learn how they got started, where they are now, and their advice for aspiring aviators. This series is brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. Learn to fly with a safe, reliable, professional academy, located between Miami and Fort Lauderdale in sunny South Florida, USA. Enjoy the training and cosmopolitan life with Wayman's 42 aircraft, 6 airline partners, and 2 bases to help you be the captain.
Be the captain.
Be the captain.
Be the captain.
Welcome to Wayman Aviation Academy.
The thing that sets Wayman apart from other flight schools here, basically the location, fleet size.
Being able to provide high quality training.
They have the resources, they have the fleet, they had everything I was looking for to start my career as a pilot.
Wayman is a very airline-oriented operation.
The Academy offers complete ab initio flight training programs and courses.
Get to know each student, because each student is different.
Wayman Aviation Academy operates a large fleet of more than 40 airplanes and full-motion flight simulators.
Here, maintenance is priority number one, and we take pride in what we do.
Realizing your dreams at Wayman is within reach.
I choose Wayman.
I choose Wayman.
I choose Wayman.
Wayman Aviation Academy, developing the skills and attitudes for safe, successful, and professional pilots around the world. Changing lives through aviation.
Hello, and welcome to Insight Aviation Podcast, brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. I'm Wayman Eddie Louie, and today I have a very special guest. We've had the privilege to know for a little while now, Mr. Brian Huff from King Schools. Hello, Brian.
Hello. Well, thank you for having me on today.
I'm really excited to have you today. You know, we've been working together in various capacities for several years, and you have just an incredible depth of aviation education knowledge. I'd love to know, just right from the beginning, how did you get interested in aviation?
Well, if we go back far enough, I was actually a firefighter paramedic.
Oh, wow.
So from there, I had a good friend of mine that kept trying to was a flight instructor and kept saying, come on out for a flight ride, come out for a ride, come out for a ride. And I kept blowing him off and, you know, never wanted to do it, never wanted to do it. And then he finally got me to come out. And this was back in the 1990s and, you know, finally decided to, you know, take him up on the offer and slowly worked my way through my private pilot. And then had my private, and from there bought an airplane. My first airplane was a Piper Cherokee 6, and I started flying, you know, all over the Midwest. I got my first rating back in 19 or well, it years ago. But the and then I took some time off. I didn't do any additional training after that. I was just flying for a hobby. And then further in my life, I decided that, you know, the part of what I really enjoyed the most was flying. So I wanted to pursue a career at it and I relocated to the East Coast and completed all of my flight training. And during my flight training, I realized that I was kind of an efficiency expert. I was the annoying student that the owners at the flight school did not like, because I would point things out that really could be done better.
Fearless and feedback.
Yeah. So long story short is I went through all of my ratings, obtained my flight instructor, and was given a job, not as a flight instructor, but in management capacity. So that was, I later worked in South Florida. I actually won't mention the school, but Bayou. And so I'm very familiar with the practice areas out over the Everglades. And the sure. Those are, you know, so I've done that. I've built up a total of about 5,500 hours, all dual given.
Nice.
In instruction capacity. Been chief instructor for 4 different programs now, and for all courses. and really enjoyed trying to create one-of-a-kind curriculum and modify curriculum so it works better for the student rather than making a student fit the curriculum. And those were things that, I wanted to find out, how do we make a simulator work better for a student, because it's a much better training environment. And so, I wrote proficiency-based courses, and we would expand on different ways to utilize those for the students. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to expand even further on that, because we were seeing that that was helping students with rising costs. It was keeping costs down, but it was producing a better product. And I would find that our local FAA office was having a hard time understanding the curriculum that I was writing or the logic behind the curriculum I was writing. So I was spending so much time trying to explain to them that curriculum that I just found myself at the FAA and thought that that's ultimately where I might work. And they actually sent me to DPE training school. And so that was another step that I went through. And then my second to last, I was working as a chief instructor and flight school manager, and we wanted a collegiate partnership opportunity for the students. And this was a desire because the students were having a very hard time obtaining funding for flight training or for veterans benefits and so
on. That's always a big one.
And so I approached Liberty University, where I got my undergrad from years before, and said, hey, why don't we work out some type of a partnership? And this is why I was still at the school. They flew over. I drafted the program, and they approved. We marched forward. And the long story after that is they saw this much bigger than a single program, and then hired me to come work for Liberty and expand that. And over the term of a little over 8 years, we expanded to 88 flight training partners nationwide.
88, wow.
Grew to a point of 3,000 students. And it, it obviously checked a box, but it was something myself as a professor working with flight schools. It just, we were able to provide something for a student that didn't fit the actual mold. And that was kind of my desire from the beginning of my career, is the students, for example, you've got a residential campus that works great for the 18-year-old, okay, right, that just graduates high school and doesn't have anything else on their books. Mm-hmm. But what you do is you actually exclude over 60% of the population, because once you get into your 30s, okay, you've got a career, you have a family, you have kids, right, different commitments, and you can't unplug from those.
It's true.
So my idea was to create a program where you don't have to unplug from your family or your job. You do your college training online and flight train at a flight school that's right down the road. So whenever you're free, evenings and weekends, in between, your son's soccer game, daughter's piano recital, and everything that life throws at you, you can still get this done. Wow. And that was the idea and how this progressed to be very successful. And, in the back of my mind, I always said, when I hit a certain opportunity, a number of schools, that I would move on to the next project. And so this was, about the max capacity that we had taken Liberty to. And I found myself on the road quite extensively, because I visited every school.
You're a road warrior for sure.
Yeah, at least 160 plus nights a year on the road. So wow. It was time to kind of hang up the hat with that and okay, move on. So I had been working, from my very first flight school management experience was a Cessna Pilot Center. And I did my training at a Cessna Pilot Center and continued to work at Cessna Pilot Centers all the way through. So I'm a firm believer in the, you know, the Cessna training aircraft. And with that, it's I'd been working with John and Martha King for, 20 plus years over the years. Nice. Because, you know, when you get to a point that you're either in a college program or in a management capacity, you're few and far between. And, as you can understand,
yeah, small
less community. Than less than 1% of the world's population are pilots. Okay.
Right.
Less than 1% of those become a flight instructor. Okay. And then now if you're talking of those, how many of them make it into management? How many of them, get an undergraduate degree? How many of them get a master's degree? It's what you do is you kind of put yourself into a realm that there's a very small pool. So you end up knowing everybody that's in that pool. You go to the same conferences and you bump heads and so on. And word got out pretty rapidly that I was departing my university job, and I got an offer with King Schools. They flew me to San Diego, and very cordially we discussed different things, and they did not know what they wanted to do, other than they came to me and said, well, my whole life I've lived outside the box. Okay. It's thinking about where is aviation going? What can we do? Different things that are coming down the pipeline. And then also looking at what's our customer doing. Okay. Because our customers are younger than we are. So we can't train them the same way that we used to be trained.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to take that slide rule of an E6B and just throw it out.
Yeah.
But those are things that I wanted to do. Okay. The new generation, well, they adapt to simulators. They're gamers. They
do very well.
They learn differently. So rather than forcing them to learn the way that we learn, it's let's look at adapting to the way that they learn. And so those were some things that I had done through my master's and working at the university. And now within King Schools, I'm my current title, Senior Vice President, but I had all the sales and business development, collegiate partnership sides of that. And I'm offering we do a concierge service is what I've established. So okay. There's many right now, as I'm sure you're aware, that the aviation industry is just exploding. If anybody is in doubt, Boeing advertised that there was 630,000 new commercial airline pilots needed worldwide in the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. But that was before COVID hit. So now when COVID hit, a lot of the airlines to try to save from the international shutdowns and so on, they gave majority of the pilots that were within 10 years of retirement the opportunity to retire with full perks. So now that we're emerging from this, we have to fill all of those retirement seats that they gave, plus the 630,000 that we had before. So there's definitely a surge.
There is.
In demand. And the one thing that I asked at one of the last meetings was, if we had the airline industries would advertise and push that conversation piece out more, that there is such a demand, which there is.
Sure.
And, we direct.
I remember that, the Got Milk kind of campaign, right?
Yeah.
Have the whole industry come together and say like, hey, we need, we want you to know this about us. We don't want you to know this about the job demand, the opportunities in aviation. It's a really interesting idea.
It's something that, because if someone's in high school, back in high school, I don't know what I wanted to do. Okay. Yeah. But if there was a campaign that came out that early, for something like this, even your parents probably would have pushed you in the correct direction and, and said, hey, yeah, that's a good opportunity. You want to go do that, because they're hearing that, yes, there's such a demand. And if I invest, $70,000-$80,000 or more into this career, well, yeah, you're going to be, your chances of having a good career are in the return on investment for a pilot significantly higher than, you know, than like a doctor or somebody else that's going to go through, you know, 8 years of education and then, you know, everything. So, you know,
so there's a lot to unpack there. Like you've had, we went through like multiple chapters of your life. So I want to take it back. So aviation was a second career for you, right? You were somewhere else. Aviation was a second career. And now it seems like you're four or five chapters into careers within aviation, right? Which is very impressive, right? So first of all, I had no idea you were the chief of four different flight training outfits, right? Now that's interesting. That means you probably saw the good, the bad, and the ugly. And this is all, I believe, in the last 20 years. Is that about right?
It's that's correct. All since 2000. It's all post, you know, 9/11. So
were they all university oriented or independent flight schools?
The first university oriented one was my last one where I started the partnership. All of the other ones weren't university partnerships. It's as you're probably aware, you know, following September 11th, the market in the U.S. pretty much dried up. And so everybody got creative and thus the expansion to the international market. And so, you know, so that particular school we were at, you know, we went into, you know, India, Asia, South America, and, you know, recruited students because those markets didn't take the impact that we did in the U.S. And so that was, you know, you had to diversify, you know, to kind of stay afloat. Mm-hmm. And so the university programs really didn't start ticking back to a domestic market, you know, goodness, probably for the 10 years following the September 11th, we started seeing more of it. And then
I say the domestic market is just now becoming dominant with the shortage, right? Because we've been a primarily international school for so long. And really it's in the last 2 years that we've been like, okay, we've always had locals. We love our locals. They're the ones that become our instructors and dispatchers and all those things. But they've really become the big folks in the last 2 years with all the problems with the embassies and those things.
You're correct. It's what I would say is back around the early, maybe 2005, something like that, we had hobbyists that kind of came out of the woodwork. Okay. Maybe your doctors and lawyers and so on. Back when a particular aircraft brand was half the price it is now, they were buying those aircraft and flying them. And we were happy to get leaseback owners and we weren't seeing pro students. We were starting to see the hobbyists come out. Yeah. And then what we got is also around that same time, the VA, Veterans Administration, changed the post 9/11 bill for our military students. And we started seeing a lot of military students that were utilizing the GI Bill for a lot of their benefits because we had the Montgomery bill, which was before post 9/11, students had to pay 40% of. It was like a 60-40 split. But when post 9/11 came out, it was 100% coverage up to a certain dollar amount per year.
Right.
So you could get $13,000 or something per year, which is, you know, so somebody just has to go slower. You can do your instrument, you can do a multi, you can do a CFI within a year within that that particular range. And so we were seeing more of those come out. And so that we diversified to another market, still did some of the foreign. And you're right. It was probably, I'd say with the launch of the Liberty program, which was back in 2014 that we started and then, you know, continued to grow that. I think it's, you know, progressively grew. Our first year we had 3 flight school partners. Okay. Yeah. And then it continued to grow. And
yeah, I want to say when Wayman Aviation became a Liberty University partner, I think we were like around the dozen mark, something like that, uh-huh, with Liberty. And it was a really exciting program, right? Because you're just looking at it from a very different point of view, the funding, your ability with the GI Bill and knowing how to work with the Veterans Administration. Because I'll tell you, I speak to schools all the time, to other flight schools, I speak to other colleges, and everyone has a VA headache. And it seems that Liberty is the only one that like gets it. Yeah.
It was just the sheer number of people that you've had. And yes, it is. It's something you either have to understand or not. I ended up going to all of the VA meetings, and you know, they knew me, mm-hmm, on a first name basis because I would ask the questions.
Sure.
A lot of people were scared of them, but I, you know, you'd ask the question, well, how do we do this? How do we do this? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, I applaud the VA. They're trying to be fiscally responsible with the money. But their whole job is to use that benefit and give somebody a career that has an amazing outlook, okay, and job and everything else. And well, aviation does. And absolutely, just like I'm saying, I need the airlines to get that word out there to recruit high schoolers. Okay, we need the airlines to get that word out there for the Veterans Administration, because you have people that are on the particular boards that are making decisions about benefits.
Sure.
And they may not be hearing that. Well, they're seeing that we're spending $100,000 on this person going through a particular program, and there's still the old thought that, well, they just, a pilot's just a hobbyist. Okay, yeah. It's not something that's going to lead to anything.
No, talking about return on investment, it, like you said, it's a great return on investment, not just for individual dollars, but for the taxpayer dollars. If the VA is going to be funding something, you know, it's a great way for someone. And you know, we love hiring veterans. Another group that kind of gets it, right? The structure of aviation. Aviation has its roots in the military, of course. All those Vietnam era pilots that are now retiring out of the airlines in a lot of places. Those are the ones that we love to see and have come in and become ground instructors for us and all those things. There's a strong military presence in the world of aviation.
And that's a market that, what I told the VA, for example, is they pushed back. I wrote a rotary transition program so that you could transition a military aviator that's rotary, mm-hmm, to an airline career. And the fact is, it's significantly different. If a student just walked through my doors, they would approve somebody to use, you know, military benefits for $80,000. Okay, but I wrote a program that was $30,000.
Nice.
Okay, for a rotary transition, because we're using all of their experience and what they have so far. But the idea, I said, these people have given you their time. They're coming home and they want to go into an aviation career, but they don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they'll go into a flight school, and many schools don't know the answers. Because
that's a particularly tricky one, that rotary to fixed wing transition. When they pop up at my door, I still get a bit of a headache.
it's tough, and unfortunately, it's even different by branch. I mean, if you've got an Army warrant officer, they never touched a fixed wing airplane, so they, you know, they just were entirely helicopter, and they come in and it's like, so how do I transition this? But it's a significant market because we had thousands of them that just came home from overseas. And so they're, you know, so it's a different market. But that's just one example of where my mind is I want to think ahead to programs that will help our students, save money, get them into the career and so on that they want. And we've got some additional things that we're working on, you know, behind the scenes at with King Schools and so on.
So that's a great transition point there, because as I think about it, you being a former chief, all this experience in flight schools are something pretty rare, that you are comfortable writing training course outlines, TCOs, right? Mm-hmm. Now, most flight school operators, flight school owners, flight school chiefs are basically limited to what's off the shelf, right? The Jepson TCOs, the ASA TCOs, right? Very few people are, one, willing to pick up a pen or a keyboard and write a TCO, and second, to go to battle, not necessarily to battle, but to work with their FISDO to get it approved. And then those FISDOs, they don't want the extra work of having to read a TCO. They just said, no, just grab it off the shelf, right? So that brings you here to King Schools, because that is one of those operators that is providing commercial off-the-shelf TCOs that you could potentially bring to your FISDO and say, you know, I want to do this. It's produced by King Schools. And it makes it a lot easier for the FISDO, for the chief, for the flight school operator to adopt a TCO that's commercially available.
Well, and it's the one thing that we do, we take our courses a step further that some of the competition does not, is all of our, we're not just a test prep company. Our courses, we have test prep and flight syllabus, so we have the TCOs. But all of our syllabi are processed to be Part 61 or 141, but they all go to Oklahoma and they're all reviewed. And nice. We have a letter that says that they meet, 140. So they're reviewed. We get a letter stamp that said that this meets the 141 requirements. And then we submit that, you know, each school gets that with a copy of our compliance table, which really should do your local POIs work for them. Because it makes it easy. And that's what, right. You know, our goal was, is that, you know, you should be able to send this and say that, look, the review's already been done. Most of them still want to review it on their own.
Sure.
And there's little tweaks that, you know, I'll teach new chief instructors, little tricks. And that's what I do that now for free. It's unfortunately any chief instructors that you find anymore, all the senior ones have been nabbed up by the airlines, and anybody sure. That's around might just be a 2000 hour chief.
Yeah, true.
And I had one just a month ago that called me and said, hey, I'm doing my first renewal. Can you help me with this? I'm not sure. You know, they didn't know, you know, how to do it, where to start. And so I helped with that and, you know, give little pointers on, you know, when you write a TCO, I said, well, don't ask me if it can be done. Write it in your TCO. And if they approve it, okay.
It's, there you go. Got your answer.
Simple things that people don't think about, you know, you've got a student, bad weather happens in Florida. Sure. You know, in a TCO, you can write the ability to do lessons out of sequence. Mm-hmm. And so then your FISDO will stamp that and permit that. The absence of that, well, then you got to follow them in order and a student could get canceled. And so different things like that, and the ability on particular progress checks, we had permitted that if a student is waiting for a progress check, they can jump the progress check and do the next two or three dual lessons, as long as everything's done and they're waiting, because that used
That's
to
a good
be a
one.
Bottleneck.
Oh my gosh, it's a huge bottleneck.
And so these are little things that just over the years I've shared. One of the big ones that that I share a lot is learning to land is one that every new flight instructor has problems with. Sure. And as a student, they can get discouraged because what happens? You go up and you do a circuit. You're in the pattern. You come in and the student's nervous. They're looking at airspeed, they're looking outside, they're using their rudder pedals to line up, and all of a sudden we're below 50 feet and they're sweating, and boom, they hit. Okay, the instructor takes over, they bounce, they go around. They do that about 10 times, okay, and they bounce all the way through it. And they just, as soon as they hit the concrete, the instructor takes over and you go around. Well, it's we've all been taught, and that's the way that all of us were trained, that we're just going to, eventually we're going to get it. And I said, but that's nonsense. And the problem is, I don't care what book you actually take out of the, off the shelf. Okay. It doesn't teach that last 50 feet. And so what I said is, think about it. You're overwhelming a brand new student that may have only had five lessons in that airplane. Okay. To come in and try and do this. I said, let's demystify it. Okay, so what I would do with a student is say, you know what, we're coming around. Okay, this time I just want you to watch me. Okay, that's right, it. Sure. Next time we go around, I'm going to give you the throttle. I've got everything else. Okay. Mm-hmm. Watch that sight picture and you tell me when you're going to retard the throttle. Okay. We do two or three times with them just on the throttle. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the next time I say you've got the rudder pedals, that's it. Okay. I've got everything else. So you have them master just the rudder pedals. Then we do just the yoke. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing, they master one thing. Now we go around, we give them two. Okay. You've got the rudder pedals and the throttle. Okay.
Building it up block by block.
You do that. Okay. Then you do another two. Then you do another two. Then you slowly build it up. And by doing that, I've never not been able to teach somebody to land, but it's a building block method. Sure. And it's a way that you can, the student gains confidence. Okay. As they're going through it, because it's like, ooh, I got that throttle. Hey, that's a win. Rather than after 10 times of bouncing the airplane and having an instructor take over, they're seeing this. Okay. And then as an instructor, it's like, look, I can just give them that yoke. All they got to do is get that, you know, that flare picture. And that's one thing that always discouraged me, because as an instructor, I wanted to break that down and dissect that to be able to teach better. Sure. And there just isn't something that's in a textbook anywhere to really show that.
That's true. I mean, like if I think of most lesson plans, you're right. We have a handful of lessons prior to that, the solo, where you're really kind of like trying to nail down landings, but none of them really break it down. You know, it just says landings. You might have a few check items, but like now it's up to the individual, right? And that's all based on who taught you. So you've got a thousand different instructors teaching it a thousand different ways.
You do. Most people carry forward the way they were taught and the way that person was taught. Mm-hmm. And so rather than trying to think about, okay, how do we change this for the student a little bit better? And so that was a desire that I had. And then the other method, that I've brought into King Schools too, is my desire that we want educated pilots. Okay. And there's a lot of, we all know that everybody has to take a written exam, and there's a lot of ways that students cram for written exams.
Absolutely.
A lot of different product that's out there. King Schools has gone down the knowledge path that we get a lot of students that'll call and say, well, do you have a test prep course or do you have a test mm-hmm. cram course? And
that means they weren't taught well in the first place.
Yeah, the answer is no, okay, because I don't want to be responsible for that product. You know, it's we create a ground training environment, because what that does is if you go to the other company and that particular student memorizes questions or memorizes that if this happens, the answer is D, or doing something like that. In the event that you're up in the airplane and you lose an engine or there's an emergency, well, that's remembering good. That the answer was D isn't going to help you too much. Mm-hmm. You need to have that full belt of knowledge, but I need to train you on that topic so that if your question is reworded or phrased a different way, you have the full comprehension. We know we want to take a student to correlation of a topic so that when that question is rephrased a different way, you can still answer it. And that's the way that King presents that versus, you know, just trying to do a memorization, because that's we good. Want you to be a better pilot, you know, down the road.
I can't tell you how many students I've had that had, you know, great scores on the written exams, but can't explain anything, you know, and they're really far along in their training. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. So we came to the point where even if you come in with a written test, we want everyone to sit in the ground school, right? Because you need that explanation, that time, the homework, the showing your instructor what you know. And it's made a big difference. Now we have a lot more consistency, because a lot of people show up from online courses, even King Schools. I had somebody come from King Schools. I'm like, great, I'm glad. This will mean the ground school will be really easy for you.
Right? Well, and our ground school is not a supplement. It's not a replacement for your ground school. It works well, but you know, I don't. Our course doesn't teach anything about your airplanes. Okay, it doesn't teach about North Perry.
Yep,
it doesn't teach about. You know, that's the North. I mean, North Perry is great. You get a lot of experience, but some days that can be busier than O'Hare. And you just got to know how to operate in that, you know, that area, which is great. It's so.
Yeah, no, you're doing great stuff. And so bringing knowledge in, bringing in that depth of experience you've had. Now, I'm curious here because you did a stint as a pilot examiner. You said you were chief multiple times. You thought you'd end up with the FAA, and you did. You were an examiner for a while. Most people just kind of take that and sit right there. It's a cushy place to be. But it wasn't enough for you. How come you're not an examiner today?
Well, the long story is the FAA, I wanted self-examining authority. Okay. For the school I was chief at and manager, we met the requirement, but the FISDO told us they didn't have the manpower. And as
I've heard that before.
They come up with reasons why they're not going to give it to you. Mm-hmm. So then the frontline manager at the FISDO recommended me to go to DPE school, and that fixed the problem. And so then I went to DPE school, got my certificate, came back. And there actually was a little bit of a scuttlebutt between two of the current DPEs because they said, we're not busy enough to actually need another one in our market. So they created a, so here I am. And the long and short is it was going to create a problem, but it was a month later that I got the offer from Liberty. And so I just didn't even bother with it. So it's
timing
with. With the job at Liberty, they made me, they actually had a problem with another professor slash director that was an employee and was a DPE and was spending most of his days where he's getting a salary actually conducting check rides.
Double dipping.
So they, when we initially discussed that, they said, you know, this is something you won't be able to do. Why? And I said, that's fine. I said, it's not active anyway. So all I'd have to do is I've been through the National Examiner Board. I just have to go through recurrent to get it turned back on if I want to. So that's my my retirement thing, you know, down the road someday.
Your third, fourth time. Well, after five careers, you should have multiple pensions, but that's not the world we live in today, right?
As you know, I thought I was going to coast down that path, buy a flight school and just, you know, do check rides and so on. That was my thought, but you know, we all go in different paths.
That is a bigger mission for you, apparently. Yeah. So bring us to King's Schools. Now we all know King's Schools. I did the videos, you know, when I was 17, 18 year old me, like I remember watching the videos. We sold them at our pilot shop down at Opa-locka. So everyone knows the Kings. What's going on at King's Schools in general?
Well, we've done a lot over the past, 2 years, we've rapidly gone to reshoot all of our product in HD. Nice. We've got a brand new Skyhawk that we use for all of our demo videos that's right at next to the office.
Excellent.
And so really, you know, updating content, there's new things that we've created in the past year. We created our check ride courses. And those, Mary Chu, who is actually at EFSANA, I don't know if you listen to her speak, she's a DPE and came to King Schools and we shot all of the actual check rides with her.
Interesting.
And so we went through a private pilot check ride, instrument, commercial, and CFI check rides. And part of what we wanted to do is we went through an entire oral. And if we took the ACS content, you know, each section will say, you know, the examiner must select like one item out of five listeners.
Right.
Well, we went through all five. So the entire ACS is presented, both question from the DPE and John or Martha as the student.
Really? They were the students. That's excellent.
So as a student would go through the oral, they're going to get the entire oral laid out in front of them.
Yeah.
And then we take to the plane and we do everything that's in the airplane.
That's excellent.
So that's our practical test course. Mm-hmm. And what we
demystifies that experience.
Well, yeah, because so many students, the two that have the biggest nerve problems are private pilot because
Absolutely.
The student's never done a check ride. They don't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
It's so they're nervous. And so this has really put them at ease, and we've seen an increase in in that. And the other one's CFI initial. Everybody's right. So nervous about what do I do with CFI initial? So we went through that.
That's a good one. Yeah. Just the sheer size and the breadth of the content in the CFI one, I think, is what gets people.
It is. And a lot of people will, they do the wrong things for CFI. And because they'll make sure that they've got a, 200 tabs in their far aim, and they bring that in there and they think, well, that's cool. They come in with a binder of lesson plans that are, 200 full. Big one, and I'm like, binder. You don't understand the concept of a lesson plan. And that was my favorite course that I was professor for at Liberty, was teaching new CFIs. Then I said, you do understand when you create a lesson plan is for you. It's going to be different from anybody else's lesson plan. Because if you have to teach a student airspace, okay, you're going to bullet each one of those items. But if you can remember something from memory, you don't need to have a detailed explanation. You're not writing a book. It's your lesson plan to remember that you're covering this particular topic. And then if there's an area that you routinely kind of forget, you're going to put notes in there to augment yourself, to remind yourself. And my lesson plans that I've got back from when I first became a CFI, I've pencil whipped, I've changed things around. That's I'll awesome. Go in there and say, and what I did is I would critique myself. I'd have a student go take a written test or a practical test. And if they failed something, or even if they passed and the instructor or the DPE debriefs said they were weak here, I would take notes on that. So it'd be in my lesson plan and say, okay, that's an area that I really didn't cover. Maybe I want to augment that more. Maybe I want to do. So the idea is so you become a better instructor.
Yeah.
A lot of people will try and impress the FAA by you can buy lesson plans online and just change the name and so on.
Right.
But the is knowing the idea of a lesson plan and what it's for and who it's for and that you're going to modify it. Those were some of the things that I would sit in on exams, but the going through examiner training was probably one of the best things that I got. Is when you're a chief instructor, you give final progress checks, which is the same as a check ride anyway.
Okay.
But for they film your final exam as you giving an exam to an FAA inspector.
Whoa.
And so there is no flight, but it's the oral. And then the rest of the class critiques. So it's kind of neat that, different ways that you can do things. And the one thing that I always tell students is that, okay, when they ask you a question, okay, remember, if I ask you the time, tell me the time. I don't want to know how the watch was built.
Sure.
And because a lot of times students will offer much, much more information, which leads down a path that it's like, they may say, well, what airspace are we in right now? Oh, we're in Delta. But if we go up, 5,000 feet, we're in Alpha.
Yeah, you were right.
Now they're going to dig onto something else you just said because you got it wrong. So,
yeah. Knowing how much or how little to say makes a huge difference to those check ride situations. I think it's brilliant to kind of give those courses about check rides, because one of the things that we say here at Wayman Aviation is that you don't pass a check ride on check ride day, right? You pass it in the preparation, you pass it in the study, you pass it in the 7 a.m. flights, the 11 p.m. night flights, in the study groups, in the study sessions. That's where you pass your check ride, right? On check ride day, you're walking into a check ride to show the examiner that you've done your work, you've got the hours, you've got everything done, your examiner's confident in you, and you're really there to collect the ticket. Show them you're safe, and you're there to collect the ticket. So having something like that would be huge to, like I said, demystify the whole thing, because privates, they don't know what they're getting into. Everyone says that the instrument is the hardest, but I certainly feel that the private is the hardest, and then no doubt that CFI, just because of the breadth, and it's an all-day kind of thing. It's a different beast at the CFI level.
Private tends to be the more difficult, because when you learn to drive a car, you were always a passenger in a car. Most people were not passengers in an airplane before they started learning to fly an airplane. And there's so many new things, that you learn in an airplane, but becoming a pilot it helps. Parents always would come in that are 16 years old and say, well, should my son or daughter become a pilot? And I said, well, it'll make them a better student. And they said, well, how do you know? I said, well, it's going to teach them flows and patterns. I guarantee there's every pilot that you talk to gets up and has the exact same routine every morning. You probably wear out the carpet. You get out of bed and you go down to the coffee maker and you do, you know, yep. that it's the same thing that you do, you know, each morning.
That's interesting.
And you do it the same way, because that's the way we were taught. When we became pilots, okay, you walk out to the airplane, you walk around the airplane the same way, you follow a checklist mm-hmm. as soon as you start up. And so having that organized flow in your life helps you be more organized. It helps lead to, like myself, leads to management positions. Mm-hmm. That I look at things, I'm an efficiency manager now, that I look at things for effective ways to make things better. And the way I've been taught as a pilot helped me get there. So it may be something. So even if somebody doesn't want to go to the airlines, mm-hmm. just becoming a private pilot, or maybe even just making it to solo, will make them a better student and a better employer or employee later on.
So let's take a moment on that phrase, because I hadn't heard it before you mentioned it earlier. Now you've mentioned it twice, efficiency manager, right? I hadn't heard of that phrase, but it makes a lot of sense, because if you have an efficiency mindset, you're always looking to do it better the next time. Like, you know, can we do it faster, better, you know, whatever it might be. I'm curious about that term. Did you come to that? Is that something you picked up along the way?
I've always identified myself as an efficiency manager. Okay. Nice. Yeah. And that's how I got my first, job as a manager of a flight school. I was telling you're wasting too much time and money here. Okay. You know, different things. It could be down to how you're scheduling planes or how you're turning planes, when we're fueling planes, different thing. And so, you know, then I got involved. Well, then it's now, it's from like the King Schools Avenue. I'm like, well, okay. And efficiency is using the best resources that you have with your staff, identifying where the staff are strongest and mm-hmm. placing them in the correct spot. Because when they're on the right seat of the bus and you let them go, the company's just going to take off. And that's because you're giving them the creative mindset and to do that. And what we've done with efficiency is make sure that you're utilizing all of the resources that are there and identifying those. And mm-hmm. so some businesses will, employees are scared to speak out or offer their opinion. They may feel that there'll be repercussions or they're walking on eggshells or things like that. And that's the first thing that I want to try to get rid of at a business, because that can tend to be a cancer.
Especially in aviation, that's a safety concern. That's why there's all this emphasis on just culture and speaking up.
Yes. Yeah. Don't applaud people for speaking up and applaud people for, if somebody comes in, if I could have written a curriculum at TCO that I think is the best thing since sliced bread, somebody else comes in with an idea to make it better. Okay. Don't take offense to that. Okay. Mm-hmm. What I want to do is I used to ask employees when I'd hire them at their first annual review or even before, I'd sit down and say, okay, where do you want to go? I honestly know you're not going to stay with me forever. Where do you want to go? And it's my job to get you there, okay, as best prepared as we can. And that could be a flight instructor job when I was chief instructor. I knew every one of them, okay, regardless of what they said. First thing, don't go into a job and tell them you want to be a career flight instructor. It's because we all know that we can see through it. But our job is, if you want to get to this point, okay, we know what they're looking for. And those are the things that if we can make you well-rounded, because you're carrying our company's name to that airline as well. And so we want to make sure that you succeed and do it well. And so it's a different mindset. And what I like with King, you mentioned, you know, the ability with these courses and different things. In the past, it's been a little bit different. And that's one new initiative that I'm just launching within the next month. Is we used to have physical product. I learned to fly so long ago, I learned to fly on VHS tapes.
Yep.
And then it progressed, you know, from there.
The DVD.
Back at that time, flight schools were able to carry physical product and sell it. But everything has gone digital. And the number one reason that everything went digital, people always ask, well, don't you have a book? And the problem with the book, by the time it prints, it's out of date. And so we don't want to print a book because there's always so many changes in the product. So by having a digital copy, we have a library that has 85 eBooks in it, but we can change those on the spot. It's updated for everybody. We're giving anybody that wants to work with us access to become a retailer for our product. And so, for example, what you do is you'll have access to our landing page, and you can go in and any of these CheckRide courses or any other courses, you could type in and order one for a student, okay, and just hand them the code and do things so that now we allow the flight schools, you know, they're going to get partner discount, you know, from us to order things, but then they can turn around and retail it and they don't have to inventory any product. That's so great. It's a neat idea that we've
quality digital products up
all 95 of our courses from, you know, everything up to the type ratings and CRJ 737 to, you know, all the way down to private pilot and all the ones. So there's a lot of different people that that's one new thing that I said, look, we've got over 300 flight school partners. I want them all to have access to be able to resell the product again. And
that is excellent. So you've given us a lot of insight into aviation education today, and I'm really glad to see kind of King revitalizing. You know, it's far from gone away. In fact, I'd say with you coming on board, it's a whole other chapter spreading out here for King, especially because, like you said, aviation education has gone to YouTube, to all these different courses, to there's a lot of these products out there, but King is the standard bearer, right? They're the benchmark, and you know, no one should beat you except yourself, right?
Well, it's true. And King, when people say King, they immediately think of John and Martha, who they are the pioneers. You know, they're licensed to fly and instruct in every platform that's out there. And that's an achievement that they've made. Well, what we've got is the company is larger than that. We're over 70 employees, and we've got a lot of different talent now that we've brought in, some younger generation people that are on camera in the airplanes and doing so. And so the legacy that's there and the way that we want to do this moving forward is, you know, is never going to change. We're still wanting to create the better product and the better pilot. And like I said, there's new initiatives with maintenance and many other things that are coming down the road that I'm just happy to be a part of. They, you know, I've always lived outside the box. And so to come to a school where like this, that I get to write curriculum and do things to make training better and easier for different people. I finally made it to my sweet spot. So it's kind of, I'm excited.
That is very exciting. That is very exciting. You know, Brian, this has been really enlightening. I love that you've got this platform, the King Schools, and you yourself have impacted thousands of pilots through your aviation career. You know, not to the just the multiplier effect within Liberty University is very impressive. But now to have another great big platform like King Schools to really influence flight education going forward, it's a lot of responsibility, and I'm glad that you're there at the helm, you know, helping to write those TCOs and bring them to new colleges, to new flight schools all around the country. It's really exciting. How can people reach out to you or reach out to King Schools? Where can we find these materials?
Well, I can just give everybody my emails. Just B as in boy, H-O-U-G-H at kingschools.com. Mm-hmm. So if you've got any questions, whether you're a student, whether you're a flight instructor, I mean, go ahead and pick my brain. That's, you know, I've been around. There's a lot of stuff up there if it can help you out. We're there from the brand new flight school or community college that wants to start up. If you don't know how to write a TCO, if you don't know how to write an academic course, that's what we're here for. And, you know, we'll help, you know, use my expertise and background in both collegiate realm and flight school realm to you know, help your program. And if there's a one-off that we don't quite have yet, I love a challenge too. You know, that we'll you know, we had one particular school was training international students, and we ended up creating a product that had subtitles for international students. And that's why I said I like a challenge. So if there's things that you know, that
I might have I might have some for you that come to mind. There's always been this gap that there's no convalidation TCO, and all international students have to be 141. So what happens if you're a 250-hour pilot from Peru or Colombia? You know, you basically have to redo a lot of the training. So that's one of those niches I might pick your brain about. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. I hope everyone got a lot out of this. If you want to reach us, we're wayman.edu, wayman.edu, at Wayman Aviation on all the social platforms. Brian, thank you so much for your time today. I really look forward to seeing you and everything that King Schools has to do.
My pleasure. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Remember to go out there and be the captain.
This series is brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. Learn to fly with a safe, reliable, professional academy located between Miami and Fort Lauderdale in sunny South Florida, USA. Enjoy the training and cosmopolitan life with Wayman's 42 aircraft, 6 airline partners, and 2 bases to help you be the captain.